Hi guys, welcome back to Sir TV. I'm Rota Akpata, your usual host. So today we have Muhammad Ali in studio. Not the boxer. actually, Muhammad is the CEO of WWives. We're going to tap on him. He is young and extremely successful at what he does. He does amazing work. So I want us to actually tap into him today and let's get to know him better. Welcome to the show, Muhammad.
Hi, Rota. Nice to have you. Yeah. Nice to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for flying in. Thank you for making sure and being proactive for us to tap into you today. How are you doing?
I've been good. I've been enjoying the journey. So, yeah, it's been a short journey, but a very interesting one.
Yeah. How was your flight?
Flight was short as well. So, yeah, up and down. Yeah, 45 minutes or so. Mm. So, it came with Aer Lingus going with Air Botswana.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, we have to support our local guests. Yeah. So, Muhammad, I want us to get into a little bit of who you are before we actually, you know, talk about your professional journey. Who is Muhammad? Tell me who is Muhammad.
I mean, you mentioned the great Muhammad Ali, the boxer. You know,
You're named after him.
Yeah. So here's the irony. I don't think my parents knew, but he's born on the 17th of January. Mm-hmm. And so am I.
Is it?
Yes.
Are you sure your parents didn't know?
They didn't know. So I know when I was in Marapula, one of the forms, I think form two or something, one of my teachers came to me and said, "Do you know you're born on the same day and same month as the great Muhammad Ali?" And I said, "Impossible. It can never be."
Wow.
And we Googled it and we saw and we were like, "What?" So yeah, I think it was 14 years later, I realized, okay, I was born on the same day as him. But yeah, it's been a remarkable journey. I was born, as I said, 17th of January 1985 in Princess Marina Hospital here in Gaborone. Mm-hmm. So born here, brought up here. I love Botswana. Botswana is the home. You know, this is the soil where you can see my blood gets the calmness from, you know, and the inspiration from. I went to a Jack and Jill, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
That was the kindergarten.
Yes.
So I went to Jack and Jill, kindergarten, and then I moved to Thornhill Primary School.
Yeah.
I think it gave me a huge platform to understand how to communicate, and it gave me a lot of the special skills. I think besides the academic world, what was nice in Thornhill was I was exposed to a lot of sport. Mm. So I did a lot of athletics, I did a lot of cricket, any sport that was out there, I wanted to partake in, softball, soccer, you name it. And I grew a good bunch of friends. And I think the highlight in Thornhill Primary was in Standard 7, when you leave, there's a leadership award, you know. And I shared that with Lebogang.
Mutibatsele, yes. By the way, we're classmates, guys.
So yes, and Lerato was our classmate as well. So, I mean, it was brilliant to be part of that. I still remember one of vice principals, Mr. Alistair Stewart, he was there. So he was also a good figure for me getting to where I am now, I think. I think when he came into coaching us in cricket or athletics or soccer.
And he loved cricket.
He loved cricket.
Yeah, like
he
you
loved,
did.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
He
instilled these three words that I still stick by today. He said, you know, it's all about discipline, determination, and dedication. These three Ds. And, you know, it's stuck with me for so many years.
Yeah, imagine from Standard 7, guys.
From Standard 7,
Yeah. So what you're saying is, you know, that those foundations were the one that built you to, because, I mean, even when you're winning the leadership, you know, awards and everything, that means you've always, do you think leaders are born? What's your view on
sure,
this one?
It's difficult, hey? Yes and no. I think leaders, yes, are born. But I also feel that they can be made, you know, with the right attitude, with the right discipline, with the right determination, you know. And I think the attributes of a leader is good communication. Yeah. If you have good communication skills and are able to self-motivate and motivate others, definitely you can be made.
And good listener.
Yes, that's also very true. Very true.
All right. So tell me about after school, you went to University of Pretoria. Tell me about your journey post high school.
So after I finished my, we used to call it O-levels or IGCSE in Marapula. I did a year of AS levels. Mm. And then I always thought I would go to the UK, you know, to study there or be closer to cricket or some sort of sport that would give me a better opportunity. Fortunately or unfortunately, my father looked in the papers and found out there was a qualification called Industrial and Systems Engineering, which I had totally no idea what it meant.
What it was then,
So he asked me to to go to South Africa to apply to a few universities. So I applied to Wits University. At that time, it was Rau Rand Afrikaans University, which is now called UJ, University of Johannesburg, University of Pretoria, and Tshwane University of Technology.
Mm.
So I got accepted in different elements. So I think the one that my father was really keen on was industrial and systems engineering, which I was not keen on.
Yeah.
And it was previously known as Pretoria Tech. So I joined Tshwane University of Technology first.
Mm.
I did my 2 years there when it comes to S1, S2, S3, S4, and I did my practical training. I think that's where my journey started. So your practical training is after your theoretical, before you get your diploma, you have to go and do some sort of training in the field. And I was fortunate to be part of the Daimler Chrysler Group,
mm-hmm.
where I got training in an organization called Automotive Leather Company. I had a very good mentor. He was a German guy, very strict, very disciplined. And it was nice to be under his wing. So he introduced me to the world of international standards.
Yeah.
And he helped me create a foundation in terms of what exactly standards are and good governance is. And then from there, I went to the nuclear industry after I finished, a year of training. Whilst I got my diploma, I was doing my BTEC on the side. And then I went to the nuclear industry. I was doing process engineering in the nuclear industry. And then from there, when I got my BTEC, I was given the opportunity to go to University of Pretoria to pursue my honors. Mm. And that's when I went into doing my honors whilst working in the nuclear industry. And yeah, right now I've got my master's in industrial and systems engineering and busy pursuing my PhD, my doctorate in industrial and systems engineering.
Yeah, okay.
So that's been my journey in terms of the qualification that I've taken. And in between, I've done a few courses here and there. But ideally, I think having the qualification industrial and systems engineering, it's quite a diverse qualification. It's not building or putting, bricks,
yes.
like as people think, or dealing with high machinery. I think it's the engineering of business processes in the business world, on the corporate world. So, I think that helps a lot.
It helps a lot, especially now that we're going to be talking about your business.
Yes,
and
yes.
and how you ended up opening the business. So now you were doing your master's, and then did you leave that, or were you doing it simultaneously as you're working?
So when I was at the nuclear industry and I was doing a little bit of training in terms of what process engineering, so it was an interesting project. We were using helium as a source of energy to produce electricity. It was a prototype in South Africa.
Mm.
So I was doing a lot of presentations of how important international standards are, governance and process engineering collaborate together. And there was a gentleman there from an organization called South African Quality Institute, which today now is known as SEDA, Small Enterprise Development Agency. And they saw something in me. You know, they saw me present. They gave me their business card and said, look, Mohammed, I don't think the whole Pelindaba Nexa PBMR project, which was what it was called, Pebble Bed Modular Reactor, is going to last too long. So here's a card, give us a shout when you want to be able to jump careers.
Mm.
So I think I never thought much of it. I continued as is, but I do recall whilst I was working there and yes, studying part-time, I heard the Minister of Finance at that time, Trevor Manuel in South Africa,
yeah.
saying that they're going to be cutting the budget for the nuclear project. And that meant us, which meant
yeah.
obviously we were all going to have a huge impact when it comes to job cuts. So the idea was, okay, where do I go? So I tried to look for jobs, before I made that phone call. But here's the thing, being a Motswana citizen living in South Africa, it was extremely difficult
yeah.
to get an interview. You know, forget about the credentials I had. It was just so difficult to get an interview. The fact that I had a study permit before and I was doing my experience or learnerships, through that study permit, it was okay. But now that I'm moving away from that permit and needing a work permit to be able to establish myself, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
So that's when I decided to call him, and I thought I was going for a job interview.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, So I dressed up, I went for the job, thinking it was a job interview, and the gentleman Ilya and Malembe had a chat with me, and they said, Mohammed, we are not here to employ you as an individual. We need you to start a business up.
Mm.
And I was like, start a business?
How old were you at this
time? I think, if I recall, I was around 23.
Mm.
I think 23 years old. I was 22, 23, 23 years old. So I'm a bit confused now because here I am, that's very young. I was much more thin and fit.
Yeah, there were no kids and wife.
There were no kids and wife, correct. So I was very concerned. I was like, no, I'm a kind of person that wants to know how much money I'll get at the end of the month so I can live my life within the means that I am living in. And I was accustomed to being comfortable with having a salary. So I was very, very unsure at the age of 23 years old of what a business is all about.
Yeah.
And I explained this to him and they said, Mohammed, don't worry, we'll support you. You have what it takes. There's a niche environment of international standards, ISO standards in terms of what you know. And we want you to be able to come and facilitate in our organization and train the people in Africa of what you know and your experiences. So I said, but I'm young. How do I train people that are so much older? They said, don't worry, the theoretical and the practical knowledge you have, trust me, it's much more than what people do have over 30 years of experience.
You'll be okay.
I'll be okay. So he assured me.
Yeah, that's an amazing leader.
It's yeah. So
what a blessing.
It was, I think, God, you know, my parents have prayed very well,
yes,
you know,
for me to be where I am. Yeah.
So I remember them taking me downstairs. It was in Sunnyside and forced me to open up a company. And that's when I was like, okay, I don't even know what to name my company. So I phoned my dad here in Botswana and I asked him, Dad, look, this is what's going on. I don't know what to name my company. He said, okay, what's your vision? I said, well, maybe global, you know?
Yeah.
I had a big vision then.
Global.
I said, global. He said, yeah, global doesn't sound too nice. What about worldwide? So I'm like, worldwide is great. And then I was like, worldwide what, Dad? He's like, no, put your qualification there at the end. So worldwide industrial and systems engineers.
Amazing.
So that's how the name came in. And I submitted
through that phone call with Dad.
And then it got submitted. And then later on, I realized, hey, it can be an acronym, WYS. You know, and it was just a one-man show, just me. And truth be told, South African Quality Institute and CEDA helped me a lot.
Yeah.
They gave me a lot of opportunities. My first company they asked me to train was in ArcelorMittal in Saldanha Bay, a group of very highly sophisticated engineers. And they asked me to do a 10-day course, an American-based course on certified quality technician. It's a lot of stats, a lot of, you know, engineering stuff. And I said, yeah, I can do this. I've read this. I've done this before. I've got the experience. Let me go. And I did it and I did it quite well. I got really positive feedback. The people loved me in Saldanha in Cape Town as young as I was. And when that positive tick came on, they gave me an opportunity where there was three consultants that failed. They were training the Diplomatic Academy, where they train diplomats in South Africa, the Department of Foreign Affairs, to become diplomats for South Africa. So now it's called DIRCO, the Department International Relations and Cooperation. So they were going through ISO 9001 and two or three other consultants prior to me had failed. So they had given me this task to say, look, this is a huge task. Can you take them over the line? So I said, yeah, sure. I'll do my best. We're very challenging.
Still 23. Amazing.
Having meetings with these diplomats, trying to explain to them what ISO is and trying to get their buy-in was really challenging because they've been burnt a couple of times before.
Burnt by previous trainers?
By previous consultants and previous trainers. So I went in with an approach to say, I'm here to learn. I'm here to help. I will do all the admin work for you guys. Yeah. Don't worry. I'll document your policies. I'll document your process. I'll try and alleviate as much burden as possible from your shoulders and get this done. And it was the first time in my life where I was given a timeline of 6 months. And it was the first time in my life I didn't meet a timeline. I was able to get it over the line in 9 months, you know. But what was nice was I was able to get it over the line and they were very grateful. Actually, the lady that was the head of the department then is now the diplomat for South Africa in New York in America.
Yeah.
So Dolores, so we've actually got close ties there. So I helped them establish that. And ever since then, the confidence just,
just grew.
Now,
because you relieved them. Exactly what you said. I'm going to make things easier for you.
Correct.
Although, like you're saying, you estimated 6 months, but it ended up being nine months.
Yes.
But because you're dealing with probably grown-ups who understand these things, but they're already seeing that you're doing a good job. So how did they handle the time lapse, like the 9 months?
They were very nice. They didn't put any penalties. I was someone that wasn't chasing money. I think that's a key thing.
At the time,
I was more trying to build my reputation.
Quality.
So I wasn't invoicing for time that I felt that I was not, you know, delivering on.
Yes.
So I always invoice based on deliverables. I didn't invoice based on time. I said, let me get the outputs and then I will invoice so that they feel gratified when they are paying for an invoice.
Yeah.
And I think that helped a little bit when I didn't meet the timeline, because although the timeline was not met, the sponsor, the client were at ease to say that at least this guy is going to take us over the line and is not running after the money like the previous consultants were. So I think that put them a little bit at ease. So there wasn't many issues around the time.
Yeah, what gave you that wisdom at 23 not to go after the money? And just
know and that I think it's very important for the youngsters today. I think you get sucked in with the social media in today's time to wanting to get a nice car, a nice house. And if you can't live within your means, and I come from a very humble home where my dad and my mom always, you know, if you wanted to have a sports shoe, it would take a huge effort to get that athletic shoe, you know, and they instill that in me. So when I went into South Africa, I was very worried of being consumed with by looking at my friends in terms of how they were living their lives. And I was very scared to say, you know what, my parents have taken a huge sacrifice to allow me to come to South Africa. Yeah. I don't want to be a failure. I don't want to go and spend money that is unnecessary. So I had to be very grounded. I had to be very patient. And I was someone that believed in my work. I was told once by my dad, don't ever run after money. Let the money run after you.
It's your dad.
So that was my dad. And I think that meant a lot to me because it stuck with me. I wasn't chasing money. I was driving a normal Toyota Corolla. Are you with me, right? That took me from point A to point B. I was very happy. I wasn't dressing fancy. I wasn't going out. Fortunately, I don't drink. So, you know, there was a lot of savings.
And you were not even distracted adversity to explore, to no, nothing?
Nothing towards alcohol. Yes, I went to clubs and all of those things to experience,
alcohol,
but no alcohol, no drugs. I was very into my sport. So, I didn't want to jeopardize. I actually was thinking maybe one day I'll go the sporting route. I was trying my best. So you don't want to jeopardize your sporting career by taking drugs or alcohol, and then, you know, when you go through a doping test, because I was playing for the South Africa, the Botswana national team cricket at that time. So I didn't want to jeopardize a brand. I was very grounded my way. My father was like, you're representing a country. So make sure when you're representing your country and the country's done a lot for you, you don't let them down.
Absolutely.
So with that fear in me, I try to stay away from anything to do with alcohol, anything to do with drugs, and to try and keep me grounded. And that also helped me in my career. And I think that's what's most important. If people can be patient enough, just be patient enough, give yourself time and opportunity to put the hard work in before you bear the fruits. But if you, as soon as you get your first check, you go and blow it, you are going to be in deep trouble because you're living out of your means.
Out of your means, yeah. So basically what you're saying here, because I mean, now we're talking on the parenting aspect, that even us as parents, what we instill in our kids, you know, from the on-go on living within your means, and this is how it actually works, like how your dad did. And also don't work for the money at the beginning, just volunteer, go and learn. So that's what I was trying to figure out at 23. Where did you get the wisdom of knowing that at this time it's not about the money, it's about learning? It's basically also upbringing, besides it's obviously the schools and the mentors that were surrounding you as well.
Yes.
You know, in our conversation as well, I know you also mentioned your dad praying for you, you know, your parents praying for you. You know, it's like such a blessing. You said they also prayed. My parents, you know, and the importance of us now, because we are now parents, praying for our children, like how much it impacts them and how we also influence them, you know, in that trajectory of their careers. And so, oh, this is such an interesting journey. So tell me now, with the diplomats, then what? You know, from the diplomats, you did a great job with them. This is now WWISE is registered. Yeah, it's running. Are you the only employee at this point?
Yes, just me by myself.
Yeah.
Sole man.
And you're the sole owner of this company. This company as well. So these guys are just contracting to you to get the job done.
Correct, yes.
All right. Amazing, because they could have easily employed you.
Yes, they could have, yes.
So that was a blessing.
That was a blessing. I think also there were discussions around employment.
Yeah.
But here's the weird thing. I was Motswana.
So it wasn't easy.
You know,
so they needed to find a way. That was also a blessing in disguise.
It was a blessing in disguise. So there were offers at that time to say, come and join us. And, you know, the monies were always great. And I would be honest with them and saying, I'm a Motswana citizen and I'm currently on a business permit right now, you know. And they were very reluctant to say, yeah, you know, because in South Africa, there's this whole broad-based Black Empowerment Equity Act, the BBBE. And if you're a foreigner, you don't even fall into that whole category of point systems.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult for me to get the opportunity as a job, but it was a blessing in disguise for me to continue with my business.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me now, post the diplomats, great job. You did a great job. how did now the business start growing? How did you now start building the business to continue growing and getting a team member? Take me through that process.
So what had happened was now the South African Quality Institute has split into two. Mm. So the Department of Trade and Industry in South Africa had created a non-profit called South African Quality Institute, which was sole mandate was to train and uplift people around Africa around quality standards and international standards. So I became one of their subcontractors where I'd facilitate and lecture for them. Mm. And I'd be training people from Botswana, believe it or not, from a lot of people from Botswana came there. I trained them.
Amazing.
You know, engineers, procurement people. Yeah. So I was part of the South African Quality Institute training facilitators. And then they had an organization called SEDA, Small Enterprise Development Agency, Small Science and Technology Program. Mm. So this program in South Africa has three key products. One is an incubation where they give you a mentor. Small companies where they don't know how to start up a business, they give you a grant. So they pay the mentor, SEDA, to go to you and guide you through your journey. Mm. The second is technology transfer fund, up to 600,000 rand or 1 million rand worth of machinery. They don't give you the cash, they buy the machinery for you so that you can go into manufacturing or, you know, establish yourself in manufacturing.
For South Africans.
For South Africans. Mm. And then the last one was implementing systems, quality, health and safety, environmental information security, etc. So that's where I was fitting in. So they would go in, I would go into RFP, and I would be given an opportunity for a period of 3 months on risk, by the way. Yeah. So I wouldn't get paid for 3 months. I would implement the projects, do all the admin work, etc., and then get them over the line through certification with the SABS or any other certification body. So that was what was happening as a one-man show. And what I would do is now and then, I would ask a few people, like, you know, on an ad hoc basis to help me. I'd give them, you know, a little bit of money. And I was doing everything myself. I was printing by the China shop, you know, printing the files and printing the policies and procedures just with my computer. Mm. So word of mouth started going out. Okay, this guy can do things and he does them quite well and he can get you over the line. And then fortunately, one of my clients, I'll never forget this, his name was Ian Sandile Funeka. Ian Funeka. Mm. He just moved out of MTN as a GM and started his own project management business. And his business was running off out of his garage, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And it was just four staff and they were doing project management. And he had the foresight to implement ISO 9001 because it was a prerequisite for MTN to become a vendor.
Yeah.
So he got hold of me through the different channels of SACWI and SEDA, and I implemented the standard for him. And when I got him through certification, I was extremely gratified. And then one day at MTN, there was a huge problem. They failed the environmental audit when it came to air quality, water quality on the data centers and the switches and that they were building. So he then mentioned as the project manager to the GM of MTN that there is a gentleman that can help. So he asked if I would be interested in coming to do a presentation at MTN on what I can do. So I was like, wow, MTN, you know, I'm just a one-man show.
Yeah.
This is around 24 years old.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, sure. Okay. So I went in, I did my presentation. I still remember on that day, you know, it's all about determination. I didn't have a fancy car. Mm. The vehicle broke down. All right.
Before
on my way there, I phoned
entrepreneurship, beginning of entrepreneurship.
Correct. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And then I didn't know how I was going to do this. So I phoned a friend. Mm. He was the person that was rooming with me at that time. And I said, please, I need your vehicle. So he said, no problem. He came. He stayed with a tow truck guy with my vehicle. And I jumped in his vehicle and I drove to MTN. So yeah, those were the kind of journeys. I went and did my pitch and he loved it. Mm. So he loved my pitch. He said, Mohammed, how much do you want to do this? And I said, no, I don't want any money. I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
So let me do this on risk. I'm going to be honest with you. Give me an opportunity for 2 weeks to 6 weeks to execute this work.
Mm.
Give me the report. Let me look through it and let me try and do this on risk. So he said, sure, you know, it's a win-win for him.
Yeah.
So he gave me the report. I signed an NDA. I gave me the report and I was under the project management company working as a subcontractor.
Yeah, yeah.
So I looked at the report and I said, this doesn't look too difficult. It's a lot of admin work, but I think I can do this. Spoke to a lot of my professors, asked them for advice, spoke to a lot of the small little network I had. How can you help me get this, get that? Put all the policies in place, put all the procedures in place, call the legal team in.
Mm.
And then believe it or not, in 6 weeks time, when the external auditors came, they passed MTN. So when they heard that MTN passed this whole thing after having such a huge bump in their particular journey, they were all asking, who's the person that helped us? And then that Willem Weber said, this is Mohammed, everyone. I'd like to introduce you to Mohammed. He's the one that helped. And then he told me, he says, Mohammed, you need to employ a team.
Yeah.
And I'm giving you an office here. I have 30 sites across the country.
Mm.
I need all 30 sites done. And I want your environmental standards, your health and safety, your quality, your info. I want everything, the whole package. I don't care what it costs. You need to get it done.
Yeah.
So that was the first time where I was like, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah.
And as an entrepreneur, in my early stages, I think one of the mistakes I probably made was I reached out to my friends.
Mm.
So I said, you know
what? The entrepreneurial journey mistakes. Because right now, so you didn't get paid for that.
I didn't get paid for those 6 weeks.
Yes. For those 6 weeks, because you wanted to show them.
I wanted to show.
Did you have any regrets there?
Yes and no. Now, there's regret because I could have billed for it. But then I was too scared to ask for money for something I could not deliver.
Oh, well, you're not sure you could deliver.
I was not sure I could deliver it, you know?
Mm.
And I looked at the cost associated. It's just my time that's required and a little bit of running around to be able to get this in place. So I didn't see much of a cost associated with the 6 weeks.
Your skill.
It was just my skill and my knowledge, my ability from the training and the little bit of the networks I had to be able to guide me.
Mm.
So I felt, you know what, let me rather build confidence in myself, but more so I don't want to take money from someone and not deliver. Yeah. That was my fear.
So it is basically about you. You were correct. Trying to sort you out first and see. All right. Okay. 100. So then he gave you this project to then you're mentioning your friends. The problem was
so I started recruiting my friends, people within my circle. You know, I looked at a developer, I looked at a close friend that didn't have any debt and was looking to move away from the bank and he could do some admin work. So I hired about three friends at that time and we said, let's go ahead and do this, right? So we were based at MTN. We had an office there and we were subcontracted by the project management company to do this throughout the 30 sites. And as we started developing, we were doing well in the first year. In the second year, we started implementing and started getting
revenue. Did you train your friends?
Yes, I trained
them. You trained them out. They didn't need to be engineers for them.
No, they didn't need to be engineers. I was the one making the decisions. I was the one signing off the documents.
Mm.
I was the one that had the full authority of things. And they were doing a lot of the admin work, you know, and doing the traveling and inspections. And I had taught them what to do. They would do on-the-job training.
Okay.
They'd see what I'd do and go ahead doing it. And then within the second year, when the revenue started generating, the gentleman that I... Actually, you know, Ian Funeka and another gentleman, Olu, they said, Mohammed, I think it's good now that you can maybe start off on your own, you know, move away from MTN. They just gave me an advice. We were all part of the same consortium.
Mm.
So I went up to Willem and I said, look, I'm still here to help MTN, but I'd like to move out of this office. I want to do my master's now. I want to be closer to university. Can I move closer to university? Mm. And he said, no problem, Mohammed, as long as the deliverables have been done and you can still deliver, continue. So that's when I started the journey of looking for an office.
Yeah.
So I looked for an office close to the University of Pretoria in Hatfield.
This is a team of three?
This is just a team of three now. So I looked at which office I could perhaps get. And I finally found an office where I decided, okay, there's also a secondary opportunity where I can invest in printing.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of printers that were there on secondhand. This guy was from Taiwan and he was leaving.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to take over the printing as well as take over the rental of that particular office. So I said, sure, let's do this. Signed on and I started recruiting.
Yeah, when you say take over the printing, what do you mean?
So there was currently a printing job, a printing a business.
Oh, okay.
So they were taking large like books from students could not pay to buy books, and you just copy the books, and you know people that would come for tenders, you know, would be printing. So it was just these large printers, and they just needed to be maintained. So I decided, sure, I'll take over that little business. And whilst that business was going on, I decided to open it up into an internet cafe.
Mm.
So at that time, internet was a big thing. So I decided to merge it with an internet cafe. Mm. So, and I wanted to call it a 24/7 internet cafe.
Mm. So Diversification.
So the 24/7 internet cafe meant there were 12-hour shifts that I'd have.
Mm.
I got desktops, and I made it look fun. Mm. I painted it in a way that, you know, the youth would be attracted to.
Make it funky.
So that was being run. And whilst I was busy recruiting at WIs.
Mm.
So I'm busy trying to find the right people. I tried try to look for a marketing person, a salesperson, and a few more project managers that could help me with the administrative burden. And I hired a lady called Mei Li. Believe it or not, she's still with me today.
This is for WIS.
Yes, for WIS. I had another lady called Princess. She's still with me today. The gentleman I had for the internet cafe, Emmanuel, is still with me today.
Amazing. Is the internet cafe still running?
No,
There's Wi-Fi now.
There's Wi-Fi, so yeah. So they didn't, it lasted quite well for 2 years. And then the guy from Taiwan came back and he wanted to take it over. So I allowed him to take it back over. But, and I brought Emmanuel back. So we then had a small little office in Hatfield. And we started getting the work done. And then my friends obviously started becoming a little complacent, you know. They started realizing, okay, this guy's making a lot of money. Are you with me, right? We want to be part of this whole circle. And they were not becoming reliable. If you needed to go to a certain site, which we need to bill for, they would say they would go, but they wouldn't go, you know. And unfortunately, the clients called me and said, this is what's going on. So when I confronted them, there was a lot of mistrust, and where they misled me and told me no, they were there. And I went back to the client to say they were not there. And then they called me and they said, Mohammed, come, here's the CCTV footage, show me where did they come. So once that mistrust and insecurity came in, I had a chat with them. And unfortunately, that's where the first difficult decision as a business owner has to come in, where you have to now ask your friends to leave the business.
Yes.
And that was not an easy part, because obviously you're asking someone that's helped you start to a certain degree, and now you're asking them because of poor behavioral issues and ethical issues and disciplinary issues to leave. And fortunately, it worked out to a way where it was amicable in a way. It tarnished the relationship a little bit, but they were able to leave. I was able to then say, you know what, I need to start afresh and not have family ties. And as I say that, I recruit this lady that I was chatting to, strange enough. I had a close friend of mine, and he was dating a girl, and he told me at that time, well, I asked him, I was like, who are you dating? So here's how the world's, you know, it's so weird. So he showed me a picture, and out of so many pictures, he showed me a picture with the cousin. So his girlfriend and the cousin. So I asked him, who's the cousin, you know, and he said, well, it's her cousin, you know. So he said, I asked him, why don't you try and see if you can get me a number.
Introduce me.
So strange enough, I messaged her and I said, hi. And she didn't reply for a month or two. And then she said, hi, who's this? And I tried to explain myself. And she was in the market for a job. So I said, ideally, this is an opportunity for me to see her. So when she came in, I looked at her and I said, hey, you know what, this is someone I really want to hire. But I had my emotions were getting the better of me at that time.
You still liked her as well. Shame. Liked her.
So recruited her as an office admin person. And I got the courage to ask her out. She said yes. And I'm married to her 10 years later.
Aww.
With two kids and one on the way. So, and she's been a huge pivotal point in my life in terms of giving me the confidence, giving me the opportunity. So we were small. We started recruiting a lot of university students, graduates.
Yes.
So I recruited graduates being close to the university to help me with my business. So now, remember, we're still lecturing. I'm still doing the lecturing. I'm still doing the small project with CEDA. There's private projects that now are coming through us doing phone calls and marketing and MTN. And then MTN decide, for some odd reason, they are now going to have to cut budget. So the whole consortium associated with projects had to stop for a period of 6 months. And for me, 6 months is a huge time. So whilst that happened, I needed to downsize. So that was the first time where I think I had about, I grew to about 15-man staff, and now I needed to downsize. So I downsized to five. So with it was me, my current wife, Mei Li, Princess, and the guy from the internet cafe, Emmanuel. It was just five. So we downsized, and I had to let a lot of good people go, but they also understood. They were students, they were on contract, you know, so they went, and I moved closer to my house, which is in Centurion. And
were
in
you
Pretoria.
Moving to an office closer to
an
your
office,
house?
Yes.
Was it cheaper?
It was much cheaper. Oh. Rental was much cheaper.
So basically what you're saying is when that happens, you started downsizing literally.
Literally.
But unfortunately, it also involved having to let go of some employees.
Correct.
But do you think employing students helped?
Yes, it did.
It helped a lot in terms of having to part.
To part, yes.
Yeah,
it was easier to part ways with them.
Mm.
But also they were coming in at a good cost. I mean, you would give them what they wanted because they were just starting off their careers.
Yeah, but they got the job done.
And they got the job done. They were enthusiastic. They were driven. I never ever looked at hiring people with qualifications, you know. I looked at the drive. I look at the ethics. I look at the attributes of the person.
Do you still do that?
I still do that.
Amazing. So you know, this is a huge lesson. We have to highlight this because, you know, I remember one time I was having a commitment. I have to say this because my brother is also an engineer and he's such an academic as well.
Yes.
And every time they're employing, it's on a GPA of 4.5, you know.
Yes.
So, and I was saying to him one point, you're going to lose talent. You know, you're going to miss out on the talent because the GPA doesn't necessarily mean talented, you know, and stuff. So this is a huge thing for you to have noticed at that age that, to be honest, sometimes qualifications are not necessarily mean talent. People can be talented. You have to just be able to see the talent and then you 100%. Nurture it. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
For me, it's look, what I've learned, my brother, you know, he told me that getting a degree, it gives you the confidence that someone has the ability to learn.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean they can execute the work.
Yeah.
You need to have people with the right ethics, with the right behavior, with the right attitude.
Yeah.
If you get that in, they will help you.
Then the degree will also come.
Correct.
You know, maybe then, especially when it comes to technical skills,
Correct. Well,
technical stuff, you might then, maybe then you can then train them for
100%.
Those technical. But the attitude, got you. Yes. Okay, let's go on with the story. Yes.
Sure.
And then you had to downsize and then move to
Centurion. Yes.
Move your office to Centurion. And how did that go?
So I think...
what year is this now?
This was just before I got married. So this was around 2012.
2012, yeah.
So 2012. Are you with me, right?
Yeah.
And
I think we are about 28. There.
Yes,
somewhere
around there.
Yeah, 28.
So and now I decided, okay, I'm going to take the leap of faith. I'm going to ask this girl to get married.
Aww.
So I proposed to her 2013, August, we got married.
Yeah.
And our business is now very, very normal, if you want to call it. We're not making big money. We're not making small money. We're just stable. We're breaking even.
Yeah.
And with my committed five staff, are you with me? We were happy.
Mm-hmm.
We were coming to work and getting the job done and
helping the clients. Yeah.
And we were very focused, you know.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, after a year, MTN came back knocking on the door. They said, look, we've unfortunately made a blunder. We've promised...
For letting you go.
Yes. We've made a commitment to a client on two certifications that we don't have.
Mm.
So we've got 3 months to get this thing done. Can you help us get it done?
Mm.
So I said, sure. So I got in, got back in, helped develop those systems, information security and IT services.
Yeah.
Got them in, got the certification done. Bob's your uncle. They got certified. So now MTN started having the confidence again.
Mm.
What happened at MTN then is the manager that had the faith in me, he now... resigned. He left.
At MTN?
At MTN.
Is that the time they were downsized?
Yes.
The time they cut the cost?
Yes.
That's why.
Yes.
So that's the reason.
So now my relationship ties are not there as strong as they would be. So the new people said, okay, fine. You know, this is unfortunately South Africa.
Yeah.
So they got their people in to take over the work that I was doing.
Mm.
So I now obviously I took a leap of faith when I had that project with MTN when I got back. I thought they would continue with me. So I decided to get a bigger office and I had recruited another 10 more staff to be able to say, okay, let's now slowly expand. But while slowly expanding, let's try and focus on the sales side. Let's try and get more revenue in and try and get more marketing in to be able to get more stable. So we went and got a new office, a bigger office for that matter. And
now you're growing back again.
Now I'm growing back again.
Yeah, you're growing. Yeah, growing. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then they cut him. MTN cut
the umbilical
pulled the
cord
again
for the second time now. They cut the umbilical cord.
How long was this after they call you back?
About a year and a half. So in a year and a half's time when they called me back, so in that year and a half's time, I was able to get them over the line, do some maintenance work with them. And the contract now was going in for renewal, you know, so they were getting me a new contract. So I obviously thought, you know, there's not many people in South Africa that can do what I'm doing. And I want to, I'm sure I'll get it. And they didn't give it to me. They gave it to someone totally out of the ordinary who doesn't know anything or what we do.
Yeah.
But that's unfortunately how the world operates, and that's how business is.
That's how it is, yeah.
But now I'm sitting with a new office with rental, with 15 staff again, and now I'm nervous, you know. So with that being said, I started now saying, I need to get myself into a position where I'm unique. So I started looking around courses, short courses that not many people have in South Africa. So I identified that my skill in information security, no one has the qualification as a lead auditor.
Yeah.
So I went during that period, I started upskilling myself, getting myself the qualifications and getting myself registered. And now the nice thing is I'm still the only one in Southern Africa to be a registered SATCA and IRCA information security auditor.
It's really, Twelve years later. Yeah.
And amazing. I think the stars aligned there, because what happened there was the South African Bureau of Standards, they were going through a tough time. Now, I had relationships with them because I had given them a lot of business. They were going through a suspension because their auditors from SANAS failed them in terms of poor governance. And they called upon us to help resuscitate their system. So whilst I resuscitate the system and got them back, it gave them an opportunity to say, Mohammed, can you upskill our auditors?
Yeah.
So that gave me an opportunity to do the hours of auditing quite quickly, get the hours, get the requirements done, which not many people have the opportunity to do, which allowed me to excel in getting this qualification and getting myself registered and signed off. So kind of the stars aligned for me. And I was mentoring auditors in the South African Bureau of Standards. I was training them. I was mentoring them. I was guiding them. I was helping them with the ESCOM project as a contractor. So I was getting small work, as it may say. So although MTN had let me go, you know, this journey of now going into audits was actually something that was new. And I think after 2 years, there was a client that knocked on our door called Goldfields, the mining house.
Yeah.
So this is a big company. So they got hold of me through Bureau Veritas, which is a French organization that is an auditing firm.
Yeah.
And they say they don't do implementation and consulting work, but they know of a guy that can do this.
Yeah.
And they said, speak to Mohammed. So I said, sure. I went there to do a proposal. I'm now fighting against PwC, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, KPMG, and there I am as a small guy. But I went in with the pitch, and what the nice thing was is I had the two spectrums. I had exactly what happens on the back end of a certification body, and I had the front end of what happens in a consulting.
Yeah.
And all the other companies didn't have that information or knowledge. So I was able to give them a full end-to-end spectrum, and what I promised them, which is the first thing of business when I started off. It's when I started off, the main reason why they chose me was because I was willing to alleviate the administrative burden.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I went in. Big consulting firms don't do that. They say, you pay for my time to advise you.
Yeah.
You do the work, we will review it.
Yes.
And I said, no.
We will do
the work with you and for you. And they love that. And they loved that. When they heard that, they said, Mohammed, let's give you the opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's when I started implementing the systems in South Africa, the mining operations, which then moved to the regional in Ghana, which moved to Australia, and which moved to Peru. And I started developing the systems and getting them certified. They were so happy. They got a clean audit. And this was one of my biggest achievements. It was the first mining house in the world to achieve an ISO 27001 certification.
Amazing. With your team of 15.
With a team of 15.
Yeah. And you still kept the office.
At
least you didn't move back.
I still kept the office.
Yeah, so you diversified. So what I'm getting here as well is that, you know, business became tough again as business happens. But then you thought about it and you're like, you know what, I need to make money another way. And then you make yourself diversify money. Let me now find a way that I can make more money, another stream of income. That's exactly what you did. That's worked.
It worked. Yeah.
Tell me, you mentioned other offices. Peru, Ghana, how did you grow into that? Now you're, you know, growing in how many employees do you have now?
I think it's close to about 65 employees we have, and that's internationally. That's excluding all the outsourced facilitators I now employ, which is more than 150.
Yes, this is subcontractors
that we use specialists now and then for, you know, especially when it comes to the big training that we have. But, you know, full-time employees, I have about 65, and these are professionals, engineers, scientists, health and safety, cybersecurity, IT. So there's a huge specialist side of things that I've got associated with a big team of marketing and sales that I've got established.
Okay. So now, how did you grow into these companies? Now you're fully established in South Africa. You've grew to a team of 65, I guess. When did the team grow from 15 to 65?
As soon as Goldfields now got us, we got them over the line in 2017, 2018. They gave us the contract now for 5 years to do it down to all the mining operations.
Yeah.
That's a big scope.
Yeah.
And now with Goldfields coming in, I decided to take a lot of that money and I invested it a lot in Google.
In Google.
So I invested a lot of that in Google AdWords, search engine optimization. I got contractors to come in and heighten my website or get me more visually, visually identifiable in the virtual space.
Taking the money and investing it back into
and
the business.
I never, still, very, I'm not, very I'm not important. Doing anything fancy. Yeah. Are you with me, right? Yeah. Going all back into that. And then now what I realized is I'm not going to clients anymore. Clients are coming to me. Once I got the website up and running and I got Google AdWords running. So now I've got a full-fledged sales team. And that sales team is able to now get in bigger clients. Yes. They're able to close deals on my behalf. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges I think entrepreneurs have is that they don't know how to let go, when to let go from doing everything themselves.
How to delegate. How did you do that? I want to know now, when you got the team in, how did you train them? First, take me through that process, because that's exactly what is making a lot of entrepreneurs. They're the face of the business and everybody only, you know, and it actually does happen where businesses only want to work with Mohammed. Yes. You know, because you've been doing the training and we want Mohammed to come. How did you get from not them wanting Mohammed only now to trusting your team to be able to implement without you?
I think entrepreneurs need to trust loyal employees. So when you identify who loyal employees are, you need to look after them.
Yeah. How do you identify that?
I think when times are tough, they still stick with you.
Uh-huh.
You know, so times are tough. And times were tough for me, and they still stuck by me.
Did you reduce salaries when times were tough?
I didn't reduce salaries, but we didn't do the fancy things. Like, we didn't give them increases.
I see. They weren't getting bonuses. But it was shaky.
They were nervous, but they stayed. And they believed that, look, they were comfortable also, and they were enjoying the work they were doing. But I looked after them. If they needed a loan, or if they needed some help with a wedding or a funeral, or maybe helping with their school fees for their kids, you know, and I had the ability to do so, I would definitely. Ah. So it was a kind of relationship where when they were struggling, I was still there to help them. So they felt that, okay, he's here to help us when we struggle.
Yeah.
And I felt they're here to help me when I'm struggling.
Yeah.
So it was a two-way thing. And I think once that relationship and that bond started coming up and the trust was there, I now started understanding that I can delegate certain tasks to them to be able to take more responsibility. So the one lady, she became an operational manager. I trained her, and she now handles a team of about 45.
Wow. Operational manager from what?
She was just an administrative lady. She was the girl that one of the first girls I recruited.
I remember that. Yes. I wanted to say, is it Millie?
She's handling an entire team. So I've been able to upskill her. She's learned from me. She's got the qualifications, etc. And now she's got an entire team of experienced, hardworking employees under her.
So you trained her. Basically, did you take her for training? Did you make sure she gets certified? All this, is that what you did as a business, also to invest in your employees? Correct. To make sure that they can actually be able to take over, basically.
It was a two-way thing. So she learned a lot of the skills on the job with me, but I also invested in her qualification. So I said, I will pay for your qualification to become a project manager.
Yes.
You know, I'll invest in you. I'll grow you as an individual. And I think she was very grateful for that.
Yeah.
So she was able to get the educational background and backing, getting all the small courses as well. But more so, I think the skill of knowing how to negotiate, how to be able to get the work done and motivate your team, she learned very well. So that helped me in terms of releasing the pressure a little bit and her taking the operations. whilst Princess, she started focusing on sales.
Mm.
It did help that her late husband was a diplomat.
Mm.
So he was able to open a lot of doors in terms of saying, hear this guy out, hear what he has to say.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a connection.
Correct.
Well.
So there was it's a lot of networks.
Mm.
And I think she was able to work with the sales team and motivate them to generate the numbers.
Yeah.
And when we were struggling, she was able to call upon certain clients to close a deal which would sustain us.
Yeah.
So now I'm trusting them, and they are now at a position just under me building a team which they're managing, which they've never heard before. Mm. So now it's going through leadership courses, equipping them with the necessary management skills, and I'm investing in them.
Yes.
And I think that's what I started doing is once I trusted the staff that I had, I delegated it.
Mm.
And they then started the whole ripple effect of trusting, delegating,
Trusting the team. And it starts from where? The top.
Top, yeah. You have
it to always starts from the top. So that's basically how the existing ones that were loyal, then you make sure you reward them.
Correct.
By capacitating them for them to be able to lead. And also, I like the fact that my next question was going to be, did you capacitate them for leadership as well? Because, you know, you can capacitate somebody on the skill of implementing the project and implementing, the various standards that ISO. But what about the leadership aspect? Now, tell me, have you ever experienced where, you have capacitated this employee, this team member, but leadership, they're still struggling. How did you deal with those kind of dynamics?
It still is a difficult thing. The reason is people are not very easy to deal with. They're very difficult. Remember, I'm not selling tomatoes or bananas. I'm selling a service. I'm selling our skill. And these are people. And there's different types of leadership. We realized that we were investing in a lot of staff and they're leaving us because they're getting so valuable.
Yeah.
The older staff stay because they have this sense of loyalty.
And
they've built this company with me to a certain point and they're stable. So what we did is we invested in looking at leadership programs, looking at mentors, reading
mentors.
Books. Are you with me, right? Identifying what the best people around the world are doing, learning from those case studies, having those sessions. We actually have a lot of heart-to-heart sessions. So we are transparent enough to have an open, constructive discussion about where our shortfalls are. And I think that's very important.
Mm.
And when you identify that, then you can come up with solutions. So you say, right, we need to capacitate ourselves by getting a mentor in or getting a leadership training in or getting entrepreneurship training in.
Yeah.
And that is what we then invested in, to equip ourselves in how to deal with people, how to handle difficult situations or to handle difficult people.
Yeah.
And then we started realizing that, look, we need specialists. Let's get an HR person.
Yeah.
Let's get a finance person.
Yeah.
Let's get a tender person. To deal with them because these are specialists in the field. And as we started developing, we realized that we're not a small company anymore. We need to act like a corporate.
Yeah.
We need to act professional. So let's get the professional people in, invest in them, and they will look after your business. And that's what I've done.
That's what you've done over the years. Amazing, because this is exactly what I was going to ask you, because I think this is exactly where we mostly lack as entrepreneurs. But, I want us to take a little bit of a break and then we can get back and continue this amazing conversation. Guys, we'll be right back. Thanks. We are back, guys, as we are continuing our conversation with Mohammed. On his professional journey. Mohammed, thank you so much again for being here with us and creating the time. I would like us to now talk about how you diversified into Africa, and which countries did you start diversifying into? This is obviously from South Africa, and you've already spoken about the challenges of running a business as a foreigner in South Africa, but I think it's in every African country, actually. They all always protect their own first, which is normal. But now, can we talk about how you diversified into other African countries, and which country did you start first?
So the first country is obviously home.
Oh, you started with
right? So Botswana, right? So it was probably the easiest from a legality point of view, having an Omang and, having a citizenship, etc. So it made it a bit easier. So I was able to register the company get myself established, but I wasn't able to get business in. So I tried to partner with a few friends that I went to high school with and try to say, look, I have this service offerings, try and see if you can get me in. But the Botswana market wasn't playing ball. I approached Botswana Bureau of Standards. I approached as many people as possible.
You knocked the doors.
I knocked the doors and they weren't that. So I just said, you know what, I'll leave this company open for this matter and I'll come back to it.
Yeah, you just like let it rest.
Correct. But what I did was I invested in getting the accreditation, BQA, HRDC.
All the accreditation.
I said, you know what, might as well just do all of that. So I decided, let's get all the accreditation. So we got that in and it wasn't bringing revenue. So obviously once bitten, twice shy. Then I said, you know what, I am going to Australia and I'm going to Australia on behalf of this client of ours called Goldfields Mining Operations. And there's a lot of, then the Goldfields guys were saying, Mohammed, this is unique what you're doing. You not only come and audit us and tell us what's wrong, but you help fix it and then you help defend against external auditors.
Yeah.
Nobody's doing this, not in Perth, Australia, and nobody's doing it with the work ethics that your team comes in and doing it.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, fine, let's look at opening up an office here. So I started communicating with our accountants in South Africa and I said, do you guys have a branch or a partner or someone in Australia? And they said, yes, we do. So they linked me up with him and they said, this is the process to open up a business. But unfortunately, you have to partner up with a citizen and that citizen is from that accounting firm. So I said, not a problem.
Sure. I'm willing to, in Aussie?
In Australia.
Oh, so you started off in Aussie.
Yes. Okay, so I started off in Australia and I said, okay, fine, let's go ahead and do this. So I set up the company in Australia, got everything ready. Now I'm ready to deploy a couple of my resources across into Australia and bang, COVID-19 hit. So now with COVID-19 coming
into play. What year was this when you're setting up?
This was about 2018, 2019. So 2018, all of that was all getting set up. By the end of 2019, we are ready now to actually send the staff over through to Australia.
Yes.
So we've now got their visas. We've got everything. We've got an office in Australia. We've got some one or two locals that we've partnered with there that are based there and COVID-19 hit. But fortunately, we're able to generate clients. And the way it happened was because of word of mouth. So
Post-COVID?
Post-COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
So word of mouth allowed us to get into the health insurance fund, go into a few of the manufacturing companies. So through COVID-19, because we were so cheap, we were charging the same amount daily rates in South Africa, the same rate as what we were charging in Australia. And remember, Australian dollars is like 10 times the amount of what South African rand is.
Yeah.
So they looked at the numbers and they were like, this is very cheap. So this is definitely worthwhile considering.
Yeah.
So they took a leap of faith and they were working with us remotely. And it worked to our benefit because it was COVID-19 and you could not obviously
go anywhere
and interact, etc. So they did work with us remotely. We were able to generate some revenue and get some work being done there. And whilst this was happening, we realized we were unable to go to Ghana. We were unable to go to Peru. So now it's now a decision where do you lose those big contracts because you are unable to service them face to face, and the visas and all the vaccines and there's becoming a huge issue. So I decided to take the leap of faith to say, okay, now with this accounting firm, do you have an office in Ghana? Do you have an office in Peru? And they said, yes, we do. And then now started getting them to work and build that relationship. Now I've done it once, I can do it the second time with Ghana. And with Ghana, fortunately, with the people that I've had strong relationships with, they were giving me resources that I needed to consider to be able to help me. So I started employing people in Ghana. I started employing people in Peru. So I now got a visualization of what the market is outside of South Africa. And although not everyone was based in the country, they would be coming here for training, they would be going back, you know, they would come here, they'd be seconded there.
So it would be the team here working
there. And then we'd be sending them across to all the places. And then in Ghana, we established the resource based full-time in Ghana. And she started developing the Ghana team. And now we're now looking at expanding in Ghana.
Yeah.
Where now she's going to be recruiting more people. And now obviously the sales, etc. But I think the key thing in setting up in these things, it's having a good accounting firm.
To partner with.
So we were smart enough to work with a company, an accounting firm that was small, but then got bought out by an international company. And they had leverage through the world. So we worked with them to make sure from a legal point of view, we had all the tax and the registration and everything done correctly, which allowed you to work with the right people. You paid a little bit extra, but you knew things would get done.
Yeah.
So at least the company registration documents and bankings everything, and everything was sorted.
Administration.
So back, that is very important.
Yeah, I think back office things.
Back office things.
Yeah.
Once that happens, it's all about knowing how to scale.
Mm.
So how do you scale? So scaling is all about where the world is today. It's all about digital marketing. That's where the world is.
Digital marketing.
So it's about Google AdWords. It's about writing the right articles. It's about Facebook. It's about TikTok. It's about LinkedIn. It's about Instagram.
Mm.
That's where people are going to know, because that's where they are. They're on their devices most of the time.
Mm.
And they need to see who you are through your device. So we realize that through your website, if you create subdomains in Australia, if you create a subdomain in Ghana, a subdomain in Botswana, in Peru, and you create a social media platform that drives traffic to these areas, and with the credibility that we have, we would be able to get good business. So we
in
hire
that in those, that areas. Those areas,
and we don't have to call the clients; the clients will call us.
Hmm.
And that is something that we started doing. We started investing heavily in digital marketing, in trying to establish a brand, and then we started realizing that, you know what, we actually need people to answer the phone calls and respond and being local.
Yeah.
Then we partnered with a company in Australia that does that. So they do business development.
Mm.
So they will, you pay them a set fee on a retainer, and they have targets that they have to meet for those retainers, and they get a commission out of every deal that they bring in.
Yeah.
And what I needed to understand is, being as an entrepreneur, you can't do everything yourself. You need to share responsibility. You need to share the particular opportunity in order to grow.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Jeff Bezos once said that, you know, although he's a very wealthy person, he only owns like 26% shares or something like that on Amazon.
Mm.
So he said he created 74% shares or wealth for the other people around the world to invest in.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
Are these employees or... The other people around the world.
Around the world. Stakeholders, anyone, shareholders, anyone wants to invest.
So that they feel like they're part of it.
Part of it.
Yeah, not feel like it, they are a part of it.
Correct. So, and I think that's very important.
Is that what you did?
So in a way, that's what I started doing. So I said, in a smaller scale, I said, you know what? You need to realize that you're not going to be able to make all the money yourself.
Mm.
Are you with me? You want to, but you need to be able to share that in order to get bigger.
More money.
Correct. So that's when now I started sharing responsibility with other companies and partnering with them.
Mm.
In Botswana, we partnered with two or three companies.
Mm.
In Australia, we partnered with one big organization.
Mm.
In Ghana, we are now busy partnering with two organizations. In Peru, with one organization.
Just to get the job done.
Just to get the job done. They have the networks. They are established in the country. They love what we do.
Yeah.
They can't do what we do.
Yeah.
So they see an opportunity to upscale their businesses using us. And we're coming in at an affordable rate
for them. Yeah.
So they see it as a win-win situation. Yeah. So we are now establishing our business. And then what we did is we said, okay, how do we get more? Because training is difficult.
Mm.
So I decided to invest in a learning management system. So I created all the content into cartoons, into animation.
Yeah.
And I got them accredited and I put them on an LMS and I started selling them online. Now people, the one man, or the I don't need to fill a class of five people because I'm not going to make profit.
Yeah.
Now I can get to the one person that wants to do the course at their own time, but do it fun, you know,
online
in the luxury, and see it being gamification. Like with one of the courses we have is 12 runs or with Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
So, you know, we make it fun.
Amazing.
You know, and I think that
And you are animated in it?
Yes. I'm one of the animators. I'm one of the voiceovers, but we've got different characters, different mascots, different everything. So that allowed me to say, okay, let me push that first because that's a low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And then they will know, okay, this is what they can do. And they'll go now into the consulting route and get the avenues. And I think that's how we were able to scale.
Yeah, so the people can just pay online. Correct. Basically, I can learn the course through online. Here. You diversified. Instead of having to go, you guys having to come to us, we can just access you here. Is
Correct.
That what you're saying?
That's
you
exactly.
diversified your learning systems. Amazing.
Correct.
This is actually quite interesting. And I want us to now, that's how you diversified into all the countries.
Yes.
And then now bringing it back to South, but the head office is still in South Africa.
Yes, yes.
And you have your team from South Africa based in all these
Correct.
Areas. But you also have, do you have locals
yes.
employed there
yes,
as well?
Also, yes.
Employed over there. So how is business?
Business hasn't been too bad. You know, I think with us, it's always scary to scale and to build sustainability. you must remember that every time the structures of organizations change, you are at risk.
Yeah.
Because they don't know you, the new people, and they trust the people they have worked with in the past.
Yes.
So it's always being able to showcase your ability and making them feel that you are adding value.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most important part in our business. So it's always very scary. Look, we are doing well. We are scaling. We are growing. We've now looked at, you know, venturing into different service offerings like software development, like even having a studio and doing animation and induction videos. Yeah. Are you with me, right?
Yeah.
We've scaled our business into different areas to get more of a service catalog.
Mm.
So that's okay. But we always, I always like to say, keep yourself on your toes, keep yourself grounded, because there may be a time again where you might be required to downsize.
Yeah.
But fortunately, for with God's mercy, we are doing well as a business.
Yeah, so far, so good. So business is good. This is all the branches? All the branches across the world?
All the branches across the world.
So, Mohammed, now, I would like to, you know, get an understanding of your schedule. You have all these branches. How are you managing your schedule?
Yeah.
You have two boys, a baby coming. You have a wife. You have a family. How are you balancing this?
So it's difficult. I'll just give you an idea. So I'll show the camera. This is my calendar, right? So that's how my calendar,
that much looks,
that's
how,
just March.
Was
Zero right?
there somewhere
yes,
as well?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how my calendar looks. And I think it's about having a good time management skills.
Mm.
So my schedule is hectic. You know, if I have to tell you that I, like this week, I was actually training the Australian team as well as some of our clients. So I wake up at around 2:30.
Mm, the time difference.
The time difference.
Oh, you do this online.
This online. You know, I could be there,
yeah,
you know, in present, but, you know, due to me traveling a lot, I wanted to take a break. Mm. So so generally I wake up at about 2:30, start training at 3:00, you know, then finish at 11. But
would you go to the office for this?
Yes, or I do it at home. I can even go to the office. Our offices are 24/7. They are running, you know, because there's different people running in different countries and different time zones.
Amazing. So there's a team running for different time zones in South Africa.
In South Africa as well.
This is efficient.
Yes.
So you're 24 hours, 24/7.
Yeah,
is 24/7?
24/7. On the weekends, we try and give people the break, but there are people on standby that are able to assist if need be at any given point in time.
Yeah, so, in case your client needs anything.
Correct.
This is amazing. So now you have, what you're saying, you've managed the travel by actually now bringing the trainings online.
Yes.
Has COVID helped with this? Is it the one that
you're
able to create?
100%. So I think you needed, I think people, when COVID came, they saw it as a negative thing. We had to look at it as an opportunity.
Mm.
Where exactly can we work? So we saw that everyone's going virtual, everyone's doing Teams and Zoom, etc. So we needed to use that to our advantage.
Mm.
So we started doing the same thing, and we obviously are now looking at bringing costs down. You know, we're looking at bringing travel down, and then clients like to see those things. They like to see money being saved, but still getting a service.
Yes.
So once you can do those things and not be too greedy and give them that comfort that you're bringing their costs down and adding value as well, you basically winning them over and building the trust. So that's what we've done. We use COVID to an opportunity to do things virtually. When need be, we go physically. Having good schedule is all about time management, knowing what is priority and what you need to do and what is not that much of a priority, with all due respect, and handing it over to the relevant responsible person and delegating it to them to execute. And slowly, slowly, it's not just a Muhammad Ali business.
Mm.
You know, there's
it's the delegation.
It's the delegation that helps.
That's how you're able to also be able to spend time with your family and just create. Is your family in that schedule as well?
Yes.
You say family time.
Yes.
You block the calendar
very, very
family
important.
Time.
Yes, yes.
Do you actually block the calendar for family
Yes, we
time?
Do. We try and block a lot of time out for whether it's a doctor's session or whether it's just time to get away or even the schools. My wife is very good. She'll book my calendar out if there's a school event or there's a sporting event or there's a parents' evening.
Yeah.
She will block it out, you know,
and
we will make sure we give the necessary time required to our children.
Does your wife work with you?
She does.
What does she do in the business?
She's a lawyer by profession, and she started off as an administrator. Now she handles the divisions of HR, legal, and finance.
Okay.
And a lot of the marketing also goes through to her.
Mm.
But she does the due diligence on marketing. So she sits at the director level, and she's been with me for from the day we started, you know. So for the last 10 to 11 years, while she's been involved in the business, she understands the business. She understands my travel schedule. She understands how what we need to do to establish. So it's a good synergy. We always run things by one another. We might not see them in the same eye, but we're able to constructively come up with a solution that best suits the business. And we're able to disassociate ourselves with the company and our personal time.
That's what I wanted to ask her. They're in the kitchen. You guys are busy. You're just, you know, catching up over you know, you don't drink alcohol, so it can be a glass of wine. But, you know, over dinner, whatever. How are you guys able to separate the work from that? Like, do you intentionally say we're not talking about work? Like, how do you manage that?
It just happens naturally.
How is it?
It does happen very naturally. I think when we need to talk about work, we will talk about it. But we don't talk about it as much, you know. We generally talk about, you know, how we can be able to give the best future to our children and give them enough time and enough attention that they deserve. And manage our schedules very carefully that we're able to do that and handle. She's very good with delegating and because she was very hands-on. At one point when we were very small as the business, she was doing the legal, she was doing the finance, she was doing the HR. But she was able to also, you know, backstep a little bit and get them to learn while she delegated the skills and the knowledge to the right people and move away. I've done the same. But from my side now, it's more expansion. My vision of where I'm in the business is about expanding and scaling the business in the different countries.
That's your focus right
That's
now.
My focus.
And everybody's doing that
everyone's
work.
Everyone's doing
that
work. Correct.
You are just on the, let me grow the business.
Correct.
Let me grow the business. That's exactly how it's supposed to be. So, Mohammed, you know, you and I off camera, we spoke about the importance of partnership. You know, your partner in life. You know, this is your life partner. I mean, I'm not talking business partner. I'm talking life partner, your wife, your husband. The main role they play, and the, you know, like you're saying, synergy, the energies that they bring, and how they encourage you, and you know, into being a successful person, or both of you being successful, or building a successful business, or anything successful. Let's talk about that.
I think, you know, you have to choose the right partner. That's very important. You have to choose the right partner. They have to understand you and you have to understand them. And it's not easy to understand that before you get married. It's a total different thing when you're dating to when you're married. But you have to have trust. And you have to build yourself on certain values. And I think with Shabana and I, that we've been married now for, you know, 10 going on to 11 years, what's very important is she understands where I want to go and I understand where she wants to go.
Do you share?
And we share.
You share. You
we
guys share talk about, talk about your visions and ways you support each other.
Correct.
Yeah,
she wanted to finish her LLB and I allowed her to do so. You know, she sees that I want to grow the business and it's our future. And she can also leverage off that business to be able to ensure that the legal fraternity can also expand on. So we kind of have the right vision together. But I think what was nice is when we got married, you know, we were going to work together. We had our space. We were developing the business together. There was a lot of transparency. She could see the finances. I could see the finances. We were living within our means. We weren't
living
doing
within
things.
Your means.
We weren't going extravagant. When we did make a bit of savings, we'd spend time to go away. And my wife has this thing where she makes it very clear where when you're married, you should not stop dating. So that means make sure that every Wednesday we used to have this thing. We used to go on a date every
to
Wednesday.
Remember yourselves besides WIs, besides the kids 100%. And everybody.
And I think that was that's a very special moment where you scheduled in your life to say on a Wednesday you look forward to it. You're going out for dinner. You're going to watch a movie. You're going to watch a play. So you're spending the time. You're building that bond and you're getting that relationship going. For me, I think what's important is there have been tough times where I've not been able to make decisions. And I'm able to talk to my partner about it. And she guides me with regards to her own intuition. And what's nice, I never hold her accountable for decisions that may have not gone our way. And she does the same. We don't throw people under the bus. I got your advice. I make the decision after listening to your advice. But the advice has been great. So I'm able to leverage that on her. And we're both young. And we're both talking to one another and trying to figure out the best solution. And not always will we get it right, but we feel that we do the best we can.
Yeah.
We're a very strong knit couple. We try and do the best we can for our family, for our extended families. Mm. And when there's time needed to get away, we get away.
Yeah. And just the family.
Just the family, yeah. Just the kids. And even at certain times,
just the two of us. Yeah.
And we both go
sometimes. Yeah.
Yes. And it's so important to do that because you reconnect, you rekindle,
you
bring that moment of understanding why you love each other, of why you went into this journey, and you appreciate one another.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, you come rejuvenated, remotivated to be able to conquer the world.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what a partner's required.
So what you're saying is don't forget yourselves, you know, don't forget yourselves. And I like the fact that you also mentioned tapping into an intuition. I think there's another thing, a lot of males, I would say that, especially male leaders or even males in as leaders in the homes, on the importance of tapping into your wife's intuition. You know, for me, I think that that's such wisdom that you know that she would know. What do you think?
She has an intuition of being able to judge people better than I am.
Yeah.
And women have that. And you need to acknowledge you cannot be a chauvinist person. You cannot be a sexist person.
Yeah.
You need to understand their strengths that a woman has. I have a mother. Mm. I have a sister who brought me up. And they had these intuitions. And it allowed me to see that and evolve. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So if you allow your partner to express that and allow yourself to take a back seat, you will grow together.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important, that you listen to her opinions. You give her a platform to express herself, and you work together and support one another. Even if it doesn't go her way or my way, we're there. And I think that's so important, that you give your partner the pivotal point. And I think we don't give enough opportunity to women nowadays. You'll see most of our company, I think it's about 70% a woman.
Ah, and was that deliberate?
To a point. And the reason is that they are, they take a lot of pride in their work.
Mm.
When it comes to admin work, they take a lot of pride.
Yeah.
They're quite disciplined. And I've realized that women are very good in multitasking as opposed to
men.
Men get very frustrated very quickly. They like to be hands-on. They get bored very quickly.
Yeah.
Women have a way of being disciplined for a longer period of time. And if you have the right people around you and the right advice around you, trust me, you will be able to get
far. Yeah, no, absolutely. What motivates you?
To be honest with you, at different stages of my life, different things motivated me. You know, I think when I was growing up, I always wanted to be a sports person. You have an idol, you have a sports person, John T. Rhodes, Cristiano Ronaldo, you aspired to be them.
Do you love football as well?
I love football.
Which one is your favorite team?
Unfortunately, it's Manchester United.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, but it was doing very well when I was growing up. But,
well, my husband is also a Man U. I don't think he gets it doing too well.
Yes. So growing up, it was mostly around sport. And then as I started evolving, my dad becomes an inspiration.
Mm.
My mom becomes an inspiration in terms of our entrepreneurial.
Are they also entrepreneurial?
They are.
Yeah, entrepreneurs.
So both of them are. So I got them to be my role models. And then as you get into the business and you start having children, your whole life changes.
Yep.
And they are my motivation. Mm. I wake up in the morning knowing that they look at me as Superman. So they look at me as someone that can play sport with them, give them the time, take them for their sport, give them the ear when they need it to be given. And I'm still working and doing all of this.
And provide for them.
And I think that every morning I wake up knowing that I want them to be inspired by me, like how I was inspired by my parents.
Yeah.
So that for me motivates me the most.
Yeah.
It's that I want them to feel that, you know, the world is out there. Go ahead, grab it. There will be a lot of difficult times, but trust me, you can be able to.
You're gonna be able to make it. What is your greatest fear? Do you have a fear? What is your greatest fear?
You know, I think the greatest fear when you're starting off is always disappointing someone. I never wanted to disappoint my parents. I never wanted to disappoint my family. You know, that was the biggest fear, you know. And now I think the biggest fear is, it's weird, it's, although it's how quick or how far I can grow, it's also the fear of how the further you go up, the longer or it will take to get down and be more painful, you know. So I think that is basically the fear. In terms of growth, when you're growing as a business, you're worried about all the different people that you have to look after.
Yeah.
Because it's not just you and your family now.
It's the team.
It's the entire team.
And their families.
Their families.
Yep.
And in South Africa, they have something called black tax. Are you with me, right?
Yes. You know? Yes. No, it's, yeah. I think black tax is in every family, actually, to be honest. Yes, but yes, so, but I hear you.
So I think that's the biggest fear. So I think for me, I want to make sure that I have a clear conscience to be able to ensure that I make the right decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only fear I have is falling down.
Yeah. Oh, shame. What has been your most satisfying moment in business?
I think there's been two. One, obviously, taking MTN through unique certification in a very short space of time. And the second, taking the Goldfields Mining Operations through certification for being the first mining house in the world.
Mm.
Those are the two career highlights, I would say.
Yeah.
But personally, the biggest achievement and the biggest highlight in my life has been choosing the right partner.
Ah,
by far.
This is amazing. Oh, this by is far. Actually quite heartwarming. I hope she watches this and sees this. How much you mean, how much she means to you.
She does.
Yeah.
She
does. Yeah. What is your favorite aspect of being an entrepreneur?
I think it's the different challenges that come with it and the different people you meet.
Mm.
I've met some wonderful people around the way and however young, however old, but I think the networking, the discussions with them and the growth, you know, I think it's just been amazing to see where you started something small and how it's been evolving. And when your employees come and say, thank you so much, Mohammed, for the opportunity. My child was able to graduate, and thanks to you. That, for me, is more heartwarming than anything else.
My brother says the same thing. He's also running his own consulting business. One of the questions I asked him is, what has been your greatest highlights and, you know, and greatest gratifying moments in business? It's like being able to take care of other people's families.
Very important. I agree with you.
You know, he says, like, there's nothing as heartwarming as knowing these people are dependent on me for their families, you know? So it's most heartwarming for you, I guess, as well. You know, there are some, you know, engineers watching this, you know, also college graduates, you know, university graduate engineers watching this. What would piece of advice would you give them right now?
I think something that I learned is don't run after money.
Mm.
Are you with me, right?
Yeah.
Run after the opportunity where you feel you can grow the most, where you can express your abilities and skills, whatever it may be, graduate programs, a smaller organization, anything. And if you don't get an opportunity to get a job, try and harness your entrepreneurial skills, do things online to be able to survive. And I don't think you need to depend on the fact that I have a certain lifestyle that I want to leave to. It will come with time.
It will come,
Be patient.
Be patient. That's the thing. They don't look at things in Instagram and believe that they are.
100%.
There is no instant success. There's no instant success.
You have to follow a process.
You have to follow a process. Be patient. Give it time. It will come. Right. This is what your message here for the youth or whoever is feeling frustrated at the moment. Are you a reader?
Yes, I am.
What are you currently reading right now?
So right now it's How to Speak Like a CEO, Susan Bates.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, like I mentioned earlier, it's all about your ability to communicate and motivate your staff and also communicate with your clients and your suppliers to get the best out of them.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that. I think the best book I've ever read that gave me inspiration was in university. I was asked by a professor to read this book called Quality, Excellence, and Performance by James R. Evans. It was the seventh edition. That book has case studies of large organizations, CEOs, COOs, of all the failures that they came across, every single failure, and how they persevered through those failures to become a success.
Yeah.
For me, that was extremely gratifying because you are dealing with facts, people's true lives of what they went through in large organizations and how they were successful. For me, brilliant book.
So when did you read that one?
This was in probably around 2014.
Ah, so this is when, okay, because I was trying to check that this is basically the one that even helped you when contracts were being withdrawn, when things, you know, and you're like, you're just 100%. Like, yeah, no, this will be a part of it. I think The very last question, what is the part of your life experience you would alter if you had a chance to?
To be honest with you, there wouldn't be much. I think I'm very fortunate. When I was in school, a lot of people don't do this. When I was in primary school, as you would know, you need to allow yourself an opportunity to do everything.
Yeah.
So I, even if I wasn't good in something, I would try and do it. Mm. I would, whether it was sport, whether it was in academics, whether it was service, you have to try and attempt in everything. And that's what I did in primary school, in high school, and in my working world. And with that being said, there's not much that I'd like to alter. If you had to alter anything, I would probably say I would have loved to get married much more younger to the girl of
my dreams. Oh, really? Yes. Oh, shame. You're like, shoot, my baby, I wish I made you earlier. Yes. But I'm sure timing is everything. You know how God works, how Allah works. He always aligns everything according to the timing. But amazing. Thank you so much. I don't know if you have any last parting words for our viewers, but...
You know, it's something that I learned when I was small. So I'm going to part with this and I extend it to it. So each individual, when you are choosing a career, choose wisely. Don't run after money. All right. Look at where the opportunities are in terms of the shortage of skills around the world and choose that career based on that. And when you go into it, these are certain attributes that I recommend you for having. Firstly, it's about being disciplined. And that talks about being patient and taking your time. You've got to have the hunger to be determined to make sure you finish. Even though there's going to be failures and obstacles in your way. And then you've got to be dedicated. You've got to wake up in the morning. You've got to be able to make sure that there's going to be tough times. You've got to put in the long hours. You've got to know that there's nothing that comes for free. Those are the three. You've got to be disciplined, you've got to be determined, you've got to be dedicated. Then as you grow as a person, you need to start communicating. You need to express yourself. You need to communicate with the networks you have. People don't know what you do. People don't know who you are. So you need to voice that. If you're an introvert, do it online. If you're an extrovert, also do it online.
Go on digital. You didn't say digital. Speak. It's working.
It's working. You need to express yourself. And then the last thing is, out of every single element, I think it's about being able to self-motivate yourself. And also when you leave a conversation, motivate the next person. So when you leave a mark behind, you will never be forgotten.
Yes. Always leave whoever that you're dealing with better than the way that they
100%.
Were.
You said it even better.
That's basically what you were saying. Thank you so much, Muhammad, for doing this with us. We are so appreciative. Guys, I hope we've learned so much from this conversation. I have learned a lot from this conversation, and thank you so much for making time. You're a busy man. We are very, very appreciative. Thank you, guys. Bye for now.
Thank you.